Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 50 on Friday, July 3rd, 2009. This is the last week I'll be recording in downtown Denver for a while because next week we head for Cambridge, Massachusetts for an extended stay. I'm glad we're here for the 4th of July because there will be terrific fireworks tonight and tomorrow night at Coors Field that we will be able to watch from the top of our building. My interview guest this week is Kessler Woodward, a close friend of mine who was visiting us in Denver this week from Fairbanks, Alaska. In addition to being a successful and wonderful painter, Kess may be the single most passionate and intelligent reader whom I know, and he has finally become a Kindle owner. So I wanted to get his first impressions, and he took the opportunity of the interview to push back, as only a true friend can do, about an assertion that I've been making about the Kindle for nearly a year. I think you'll be interested in what emerged from our lively conversation. I'll have news this week of the arrival of a weekly publication that I've long hoped would be available on the Kindle, a story about more libraries using Kindles, and disappointing Kindle news on the international front. Also, July 1 has come and gone without the debut of a rumored Kindle DX textbook store. The tech tip, I'll have two. One is a calendar tip for the DX from Marcy McKenzie, and the other is my experience seeking to improve the contrast on my Kindle 2 by requesting a replacement from Amazon. I'll tell you how that worked out, and it might give you some guidance if you want to make a similar move yourself. The Kindle quote is going to be from a book of poetry, commentary, and original poems that I published 6 days ago using Amazon's digital text platform. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. Thanks to Paul Biba at Telluride.org, I just discovered that The Economist is now available at the Kindle store for $10.49 a month. That's a lot more expensive than my other favorite Kindle subscription for a weekly, The New Yorker, which costs only $2.99 a month. The Economist's Kindle price is, as Paul notes, almost exactly the same as a subscription for the print edition. But no matter, I agree with Paul when he writes, The Economist is probably the finest news publication in the world. So I've signed up for a 14-day free trial and will no doubt let it continue to become yet another way that I provide monthly revenue to Amazon as well as to some great publications. Two other recent strong additions to the Kindle store are Foreign Affairs Magazine, a bi-monthly founded in 1922, now available for $1.99 a month, and the Detroit Free Press, available for $6.99, or slightly more than my local paper, the Denver Post, which cost $5.99 a month. Next news item, July 1st has come and gone with no sign of the rumored debut of a Kindle DX textbook store at Amazon. I had mentioned that in episode 47 based on a college professor slash tipster's report on Kindle boards. If you spot something new on the existing Amazon textbooks page, which still at this moment only offers paper textbooks, please drop me a line at podchronicles@gmail.com. And I would hope there's going to be something along those lines to follow up on the promises and the expectations involving the use of the Kindle DX for textbooks. A story on Andrei Pushkin's blog, Kindle.com site, reports of more libraries which are using Kindles. He cites Lone Wolf Librarian, who did a thorough search and uncovered at least 15 libraries that are using Kindle ebook readers for their patrons. Some of them include the Howe Library in Hanover, New Hampshire, the Sparta Public Library in Sparta, New Jersey, the La Crosse Public Library, and Texas A&M University's library. They have 18 Kindles. Andre writes, if Amazon were to come up with some kind of library-oriented solution that would streamline the process and eliminate the need for librarians to constantly register and deregister devices to prevent users from accidentally ordering books, he has a link like this one, and I kind of wondered, well, is it going to be sort of a racy book that a librarian wouldn't want to see on there? No, it's the most expensive Amazon Kindle ebook. I've seen this one before, and if you mistakenly click on it, whether you're using a library device or your own, the charge to your credit card is going to be $8,039. It's selected nuclear materials and engineering systems. That's a good example of one that you wouldn't want to see show up in the library's operating expenses. Andre says, you know, the point is here that this should be a good move for Amazon. You would think libraries would buy devices and books wholesale, and more people would get introduced to the device and perhaps end up buying one for personal use. The last item in news, there was a report basically out of Germany that was a setback to hopes that there might be international sales of the Kindle coming anytime soon. This is from VentureBeat.com, and it says, this week saw the latest story around Kindle's delays in Europe. Germany, the biggest book market in the region, will not be seeing the Kindle anytime soon because of a breakdown in negotiations between Amazon and the country's two leading wireless carriers, T-Mobile and Vodafone. Apparently, the carriers have been wrangling with Amazon over charges for the WhisperNet service, the wireless connection that delivers books and other content directly to the Kindles. And this report in VentureBeat says, Europe's many national boundaries and the data roaming charges that go along with them are another issue. This month, these charges came down to €1 per megabyte, but this is still significantly more than what operators charge domestically. And this is surely also playing a role in the holdup with mobile operators. They say that with more e-readers coming to market and a growing catalog of content to read on them, the question is, will delaying the Kindle any longer prove even more damaging? The trade-off is if they can't get the wireless connection in Europe and elsewhere overseas to be as wonderful as what we've got here in the U.S., you know, they don't want to jump the gun and degrade the product, but in the meantime, they could be losing time against competitors. So in any event, that looks like the international front is still seeing a lot of challenges, and who knows when we'll actually see some sales overseas. I sure wish they'd start selling them, at least in Canada, from the people that I hear from. We'll have more on that later in the show. The first of this week's tech tips comes from Marcy McKenzie, who has discovered that her Kindle DX does a good job showing a page from her calendar. Here's how it works. On your computer's calendar program, simply go to Print and adjust the settings so that you will be printing 1 month. If you have the choice, as I do in iCal on the Macintosh, choose Big for the text size. Then, instead of printing on paper, choose Save as PDF. Make a note of where the PDF is going to be saved to, downloads, or maybe your desktop. Now connect your DX to your computer, and once you see the Kindle icon, double-click on it to reveal the Documents folder. Then drag the calendar PDF file into the Documents folder of the Kindle. Safely eject your Kindle's icon, and when your home screen returns, you'll see the name of the calendar file. Select it, press the five-way controller, and you'll see the month's calendar. You'll have an even better view of it if you turn your DX on its side for the landscape mode. Now, I tried this on my Kindle too by emailing the calendar PDF to my email address at free.kindle.com because I'm too cheap to spend 15 cents for the conversion and the wireless transfer to my Kindle. At first, the conversion failed, but when I renamed the calendar file something simpler than what the iCal program was automatically labeling it, iCal m-month m-7_1_09, etc., it went through. I just called it iCal calendar or something. But when I transferred the converted PDF file to my Kindle 2, what appeared didn't look anything like the calendar page. It was some kind of a text version, basically unusable. I tried to convert the PDF using Stanza, but I received a could not load book error. So I'm not sure if this is a fruitless effort to try to take a calendar page in PDF form and read on the Kindle 2. If you have any ideas on how to do that, feel free to pass them along to me at podchronicles@gmail.com, and I'll include it in a future tech tip. But if you have the DX, that's one more thing that you can do with it using that native PDF capability that it has. The second tech tip that I want to pass along to you deals with the question of whether you should send in your Kindle 2 for a replacement, hoping that you might get a screen with better contrast. I tried this myself based on comments made last week by Andrus Baston during our interview. The Amazon rep that I spoke with gently tried to talk me out of requesting a replacement, but I persisted just as gently, and in the end he was perfectly willing to send me a unit, with Amazon paying the shipping both ways. When it arrived, I laid out the new unit, my existing Kindle 2, my wife's Kindle 2, and also the Kindle 2 of my friend Kes Woodward, whose Kindle had just arrived within the past week, so it was a very new one. In that comparison, the only Kindle that was visibly harder to read because of the contrast problems on the screen turned out to be my wife's Kindle 2, which I think we bought it just to, I might have bought hers at a slightly different time than I bought mine. So what we did is we kept the replacement, whose screen was not noticeably better than my Kindle 2, and we sent back my wife's Kindle 2 after calling Amazon and making sure that it was okay with them, and they had no problem as long as we sent back at least one Kindle and if we were going to keep the replacement. I'll have some comments from listeners later on this issue of sending Kindles back, but for now I'll just suggest that if you are at all unsatisfied with your Kindle 2's screen, it might be worth the effort to request a replacement and see if the one that you get is better. But I wouldn't do this just because I'm talking about it or you've heard people talk about it, if you're happy with your Kindle 2, especially if you bought it within the past few months. I agree with Andrus that it seems as if there might have been a bad batch of screens in the early shipments, but the problem seems to have been solved because we're just not hearing about it much anymore. And so for most people, there's probably no reason to request a replacement. For myself, I am officially laying the matter to rest, and I appreciate the lengths that Amazon went to assure my customer satisfaction. This is even, it's a problem which, to be fair, is pretty difficult to evaluate since so much of the quality of the screen is in the eye of the beholder. But as usual, Amazon has gone to extra effort to make sure that people are as happy as possible with the Kindle 2. My friend Kessler Woodward is a fabulous painter. He's specialties have for a long time been birch trees and a lot of landscape in Alaska and elsewhere. Also some portraits. He's going to be doing a portrait of my wife to match the one that he did of me several years ago. He lives in Fairbanks, and I hope you'll click on the link that I'll have in the show notes so that you can enjoy his work and spend some time admiring it. We recorded the following conversation on Wednesday, July 1st in the living room of our home here in Denver, since he had just received his first Kindle several days earlier. I imagined that we might just enjoy a simple Kindle love fest, but as you'll hear, Kes's take on the Kindle is a little more complicated than that. I began by asking this question. How would you describe yourself as a reader?
I'd say avid and omnivorous. I read everything. I've always read a lot and very ecumenical in my tastes. I read everything from a lot of science fiction to classics. Most of the things that I read in college I've reread in the last 5, 6, 7 years so that I would be paying attention this time through. A lot of contemporary novels, not so much nonfiction other than art, and I read more slowly all the time. I never did read fast, and I read more slowly all the time. I think I stop and think more, and I don't know. It just seems odd, but I.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think maybe it is going into a well that's got more water in it these days, and there's more churning around to be done before I can digest it. It's interesting to me. I catch myself realizing that it takes me longer to get through the same length novel now than it did 5 years ago, and that was longer than 10 years ago.
Are you often taking notes as you read to remember things?
Almost never take notes. I'll sometimes make a mental note. But I don't I'm pretty precious about books. I don't write in books. I don't dog ear the pages, and I usually don't stop to write things down. I do remember things pretty well, so it's maybe that's part of reading slowly, is I ruminate enough that it, put it in a slot where I'm going to be able to get to it later in my head.
Do you remember the first book that you read on your palm? Because your palm was the sort of the switch to the ebook, as opposed to, unless there was a time when you were reading on your computer, but what was the sort of the first change in reading from strictly print to something digital?
I think it was just, I don't remember the first book, but I remember discovering with great delight, not long after I got a Palm Pilot, and I had several versions of the Palm Pilot, that I could download books from e-reader. And that just seemed wonderful to me because I took my Palm Pilot with me everywhere. It really served, other than making telephone calls, most of the same functions that the iPhone does for me now. I had my address book in it. I had my appointments in it. I had lots and lots of information in it. And knowing that I could actually read a book on it, on something that I had with me all the time, even when I wasn't carrying books along, just seemed like just an incredible gift to me. And I liked that it was backlit. I loved to read in bed, and I liked not having to wake Missy up with having a light on or keep her from going to sleep. And eventually the interface for the Palm Pilot got better and better. The screens got brighter, so it was easier to read. I could change the font. And then eventually they came up with this wonderful software that made it possible for me to have the screen roll by at a pace I selected.
So you set it once, and then it would just kind of scroll the pages for you.
That's right, and you could touch a certain key on the keyboard of the Palm Pilot, and it would speed up or slow down, and you could touch another key to stop it. And so, on the airplane or in a waiting room or in the evening, sometimes, I mean, I'd often read it at home when I could be reading a book. I would just turn on that scrolling mechanism, and the novel I'm reading would just scroll by at whatever pace, and that seemed miraculous to me. And so I got used to reading on that tiny screen, very comfortable with it. Never, you know, I hear people talk now about how the best thing about the Kindle is that it's so much like paper, and you don't have the eye strain that you do trying to read on an iPhone or something like that. And I agree that it's nice, that it's really nice to read on the Kindle, but it never bothered me to read on the screen. I never felt any eye strain. And I think I did it for, I don't know how many years, but years. And so I got comfortable with that. So I sort of come to the Kindle from the opposite angle from most people. I think most people come from a traditional book to the Kindle, and I come from a backlit screen that's even smaller and to something that's larger and more book-like.
When did you get your iPhone? Because in Alaska there was a bit of a delay for when you could get your iPhone.
We didn't have AT&T when they first came out, so I got my iPhone about a year ago.
Okay, and then you started reading on the iPhone way you had on the Palm Pilot.
And I was delighted to find several programs that I could read books on the iPhone. Stanza and e-reader quickly developed an app, and so I started reading books on the iPhone. And then when the Kindle for iPhone app came out, that was great. And I find it so much better than, I mean, the e-reader interface is wonderful. The Stanza interface is fine, is excellent. But the Kindle, you know, the fact that just as on the Kindle itself, you can get the content almost instantly right there on the iPhone, particularly with the recent upgrade of the Kindle app. Boy, it really met all my needs. And so when you started doing this podcast, you know, I was fascinated because we're friends, and I've listened to every word of every podcast you've ever done. And so I started listening, and I love the podcast, and I love learning about the Kindle. And I even found the technical hacks and everything kind of interesting. And I had this burning desire, up until the Kindle iPhone app came out, to have a Kindle for myself. And I was kind of reluctant to spend the money, because I don't like to spend money on myself, and I didn't really need it. And so I waited, and then the Kindle 2 came out, and I liked the look of it and the feel of it so much better. And I sort of had a period of lust there for a while. But then after the Kindle iPhone app came out, that really satisfied me, because I was so comfortable already reading on the Palm Pilot. I
mean, and you had the access finally to all of the content on the Kindle store.
Exactly. But really, your podcast, as much as anything else, kept the pressure on because I'd hear about these new things. And I just wanted to try it. I just thought it was an interesting interface to try. And as you kept talking about the ways that reading on the Kindle were conceptually different to you, I kept thinking, you know, I gotta find out what that's about. So I started hinting more and more broadly to Missy about how this would be a nice thing to have, but I sure don't like to spend money on myself. And so finally, Father's Day came around, and she ordered me a Kindle.
So did why do you think she ordered you the Kindle? Just following up on the hints?
Just because she loves me and she likes to make me happy, and she knows that I'm like this. That I, you know, I would. If she had any interest in a Kindle, I'd get it in an instant. And I'm not cheap, but it's not something I needed. You know, if it were something I needed, I wouldn't hesitate to do it. But it was clearly a luxury, and I could take my iPhone with me everywhere and read books and read articles and everything else that I wanted with the various programs on there. And so I didn't really need it. It was just something I really wanted to try.
Mm-hmm. So after hearing about it and then doing your other reading about it, was there anything when it finally arrived and your first hours of using it that surprised you that didn't fit your expectation of what it was going to be like?
You know, I've seen relatively few Kindles in real life. There weren't a lot of Kindle 1s in Alaska because WhisperSync didn't work from Alaska. When the Kindle 2 came out, that was possible, and so they've started to proliferate. Mm-hmm. Mostly I've seen them on airplane trips over because I travel a lot, but I haven't seen all that many, and I hadn't seen them at work. I hadn't seen them working, and so the thing that most surprised me was that flash between pages. And it took me, you know, already I'm pretty used to it now, but I've only had it 4 days. Mm-hmm. It took me a couple of days to quit thinking that something was wrong, that there's this explosive flash between pages. Now I kind of like it, you know. I sort of
why do you like
it? I get a kick out of that little. It's like fireworks, you know. Fireworks on every page. You know, it's a little extra, a little Easter egg kind of thing for reading. I think that's the thing that surprised me most. And then I had just read your recent blog post, not podcast, but your recent blog post about how you felt that it was less distracting to read on the Kindle than to read in a book or a magazine. And my reaction when I read that before, which was, you know, within the first 24 hours that I got my Kindle, was, oh, that's ridiculous. I thought, you know, he's just, you know, he's a gadget freak, and he's it's less distracting because he's focusing on the gadget. Already, in 4 days, I can begin to see where there may be some grain of truth in this. It does seem different reading to me. I wish I could tell you, I wish I could categorize and characterize that difference, but already it seems different to me. Already I'm much more comfortable with it. You know, I think the bottom line for me is that books are books. You know, what I love is novels and articles and the content of books. And I love a beautiful book, and I'm an artist and an art historian, and so art books are important to me visually. But really it's the content that is the thing for me more than the medium. And so the attraction for me of my first electronic reading experiences was just that it enabled me to read places that I couldn't read before. And the ongoing attraction to me is that I've only had the Kindle 4 or 5 days, and I'm already well into my second page on my home screen. I love that I can download other material to it. Besides, I have several magazine articles, I have several novels, but I also have two poetry manuscripts written by friends that are unpublished that I just had on my computer. And using that to send it to myself via email and then download it by cable, it was just great for me. It worked so slickly that I had wanted to do that on my iPhone and hadn't really. I had tried it using the Stanza app and using another file magnet app, and lost the formatting for the poems. But these transferred over beautifully, And these manuscripts are long enough. I've been wanting to read these poems. One of the manuscripts is a manuscript that I may do a cover image for when it's published, and the other is a person that I've collaborated with before on a publication. And so I'm eager to read both of them, but I don't want to read them on the computer. I don't have the patience with reading in front of the computer screen. I don't feel comfortable reading from the computer screen. I hadn't been able to get them on my iPhone in the right format, and I hadn't wanted to print them out because they were like 60 pages long. And so this is perfect. Now I've got them on my Kindle. I started reading one of them last night, and it was a great way to read the poems.
Interesting. So it just sort of opened up a new way to read content that sort of fell between the cracks of the other two ways that you had.
Yeah. Even back in the days when I was reading on my Palm Pilot, I had a program called Documents to Go, and I would download articles because I'd find lots of articles on the internet that I wanted to read. And I'd save them as Word documents, and then I'd just drag them into Documents to Go. And so I read not only stories and novels on my Palm Pilot, but also many articles that I'd find on the internet. And I can do that really well with the Kindle too.
What's been your experience? And this would have gone back to when you first started using the Kindle app, in terms of books that you want to read and whether they're available on the Kindle store.
That's a good question. It's surprising, given how many books are in the Kindle store, how few of the things that I look for are there. And it skews, so far, what I have on the Kindle. What I have on the Kindle tend to be science fiction novels, classics. You know, I've got Virginia Woolf's To the Lighthouse. I have a new Mary Gordon's, relatively new novel called Pearl, because it's new and she's popular enough. But there are very few art books, for obvious reasons. But not just because of pictures, because I think perhaps there's not a large enough audience for them, for art history and art criticism texts, for the publishers to think that preparing them for Kindle. I mean, I hit that I want to read it on the Kindle button all the time. Not that I've seen that it ever makes any difference yet, but... And there's, you know, there are books like Calvin Trillin's Remembering Denny, which I read a couple of months ago, was really fascinated by, and I wanted you to read, but since you won't read anything that's not on the Kindle anymore, I immediately looked it up in the store, and it wasn't there. And I thought to myself, and I think said to you, I think this is the kind of book that's going to be slow to come to the Kindle. It's not current. It's a good book. It's well written. It's a well respected book. But it's not currently popular, even though it is still in print, and it's not mainstream enough to be.
And it's not a classic enough to be.
And it's not classic.
Yeah.
So you know, I think there's still there are very large holes in the inventory, which seem to be filling in pretty quickly. I mean, I'm pretty optimistic that it's going to become almost universal, but I'm not going to, you know, I find your unwillingness to read anything in real book form bewildering. Because for me, it's the content. You know, I want to read the books I want to read.
Yeah.
And if they're available on Kindle, I love reading them on the Kindle.
I think I should read the Denny book in paper just to be less rigid than I've been.
And so I'll get off your back about it.
Well, it strikes me that it's an artificial constraint I'm putting on myself on what I can read. And I'm kind of curious, because I think I'm doing it because I so much prefer the Kindle. But it's possible I've just developed blinders and then I'm telling myself a story that if I were to read a whole book in print now, it would probably be an instructive experience, because it would test this hypothesis that I've had, that I've simply gone over to a preference for. But if the story's strong enough, and it sounds like it's a great book, and the book disappeared and I forgot whether I was reading paper or the Kindle, that I think would be a sort of a helpful thing
that
for me to go through.
That'd be very, very interesting if you're willing to do that.
I am. I will do it publicly here and commit to. But we can't find that book because we couldn't find it at the Tattered Cover.
And that's an interesting aspect of this. As you know, I went to Tattered Cover a couple of days ago, and I was going to buy you a paperback copy of the book. And they didn't have one at any of the three stores. And I have to say, I believe if I had looked for that book at the tattered cover 5 years ago or 10 years ago, when they had, it seems to me, twice the inventory of books on the floor that they do now, it would have been there. Because it's the kind of book, it's the kind of thoughtfully chosen book that a great bookstore like the tattered cover would have. And I think the fact that not just Barnes & Noble and Borders and all those big box bookstores are providing competition, but electronic books are providing competition, are making it harder and harder for really thoughtful, excellent, large bookstores, independent bookstores like the Tattered, even very successful long-term ones like the Tattered Cover to keep up. And so what I'm hoping, since what I'm after all interested in is books and their content as opposed to one medium over another, what I'm hoping is that, I don't think you can turn the clock back on that, and so what I'm hoping is that the pace of availability for the electronic book reading phenomenon will be great enough to fill in those holes really quickly, and everything will be available in one format or the other. The worst thing for me would be if things aren't available on any format because they haven't come to electronic books yet, but they're no longer available in...
Because electronic books are sort of crowding the inventory, and you'd have a hole developed that because of the transition or the changes.
Yeah. But I'm an optimist. You know, my glass is always at least three quarters full, actually. And so I think it's going to... I think it'll come. And I think the... You know, as one thing goes up and another thing goes down, I also hope that places like the Tattered Cover will find a way to accommodate the new paradigm, because I think just when I walk in that downtown Denver Tattered Cover, there's just something wonderful about being in those creaking wood floors and seeing those books in the space. And but it only works if they have the books I'm looking for. And this trip, at least, I looked for lots of books and there were a lot of them I didn't find.
I want to thank my friend Kess for taking the time to record this conversation during his visit. And I'd also like to note that his blog, Painting in the North, is available for 99 cents a month as a subscription on the Kindle. You might think this is an odd suggestion since the images of his paintings appear on the Kindle without their brilliant colors. But Kess, in addition to being a great painter, is a wonderful writer. And I love his posts that he writes when he puts up new images about the painting, kind of the background of what he's trying to do and the story of the paintings that he's putting up. The URL is kesslerwoodward.typepad.com, and I'll have a link to the blog subscription at the Kindle store. A few days ago, I added another of my own titles at the Kindle store using the digital text platform and getting some formatting help from Joshua Talent. The title is A Poet's Progress at Bennington, Volume 1, and it is made up of commentary on poems and original poems, which I wrote during my first semester of the Bennington MFA program 8 years ago. The commentary includes consideration of work by T.S. Eliot, John Ashbery, James Merrill, A.R. Ammons, and others. It also includes excerpts from a book-length poem that is not published yet titled Downsizing the Heart, and it's inspired by events that took place when I was a corporate executive. Andrus Bastin, my guest on last week's show, has already reviewed the book at her blog, kindleworld.blogspot.com, and she said in part, I highly recommend this rich collection of reflections which costs only a dollar. Before I read a poem from the collection, I want to point out that Amazon's digital text platform, DTP, is a very intriguing, exciting outlet for creative writers of any genre. I did work hard on this material for my master's in fine arts, but there would have been no question of trying to get it published through traditional means. Now, with the Kindle and the DTP, I'm able to make it available to an audience, and I've really been delighted by the response I've gotten so far from just a few low-key mentions on Twitter and Facebook and my own blog, lenedgerly.com. It used to be that an aspiring poet with a manuscript of poems would enter poetry contests and maybe fruitlessly try to find an agent, and then finally just give up and go the dreaded route of what was sneeringly referred to as self-publishing or vanity press. But the DTP and the Kindle really offer something new, in my opinion, including the possibility of earning some income since Amazon pays 35% of the sales to the author. So if you have something that you'd like to send out into the world that find an audience of whatever size, I would urge you to consider the DTP, and also in particular Joshua Talent, who really helped me to get the manuscript in shape so it looks really professional and terrific on the Kindle. So for this week's quote, I'm going to read a poem from A Poet's Progress. It begins with an epitaph from the writer Henry St. George, speaking to his protege, Paul Overt, in The Lesson of the Master, which is a Henry James short story published in 1888, as follows. Ah, the number won't matter. One other would do if it were really a further step, a throb of the same effort. What I mean is, have you it in your heart to go in for some sort of decent perfection? The poem is titled The Perfection of Sheep. Only Australia and China have more sheep than New Zealand. Only the sheep themselves understand perfection. When you approach a flock with a camera, two look up immediately. They check you out, then walk quickly away, followed by the others. Your next photo will show four woolly butts marching toward the sky. They never turn around again. They know you will move on, too. That's the Kindle quote this week from A Poet's Progress at Bennington, Volume 1. Time now for your comments. Cindy Brooks wrote me an eloquent description of how she reads differently on the Kindle than in print, as follows. I would have to say my biggest surprise since I began using a Kindle since 2007 is how much I prefer reading books on it. I am a lifelong lover of books. As a child, the library was always my favorite place to be. As an adult, I have worked and volunteered in public and school libraries for the past 4 decades. Books are such a huge part of my life. My husband once said, I read for a living, and that's not far from the truth. When a friend saw me with my first Kindle, she declared that the days of the printed book were numbered, as she considered me a gatekeeper. If they had managed to win me over, the battle was won. While I'm not sure I'd agree with her assessment for the future of print, I have to admit I never saw myself enjoying ebooks. I think part of the reason I was open to it with the Kindle is because it came from Amazon, and I had been an Amazon customer since they literally sold nothing but books. I guess there was a comfort level there, and also the technology was so different from what had come before. I think I must have watched that original Kindle video at least 50 times before I finally decided to give it a try, and I have never been sorry. I read so quickly on the Kindle, and there is nothing that thrills a true book lover more than knowing there are hundreds of books to choose from in that one little package, not to mention the whole of Amazon available at the press of a button. While all the extra features are great, dictionary notes and annotations, bookmarks, web access, text-to-speech, etc., I have to say I am something of a purist. I use and enjoy all those features, but for me, it's all about the reading experience. I read so quickly and with less distraction and eye strain, and somehow, though I can't explain why, it seems easier to concentrate on what I am reading. Much to my very great surprise, I have found that I now prefer reading on the Kindle to reading a paper book. The device I once thought I'd use primarily for travel has become my first choice for reading. I would have to say my biggest disappointment has been the contrast issue, quality control, of the Kindle 2. I had the unfortunate experience of having to go through 3 Kindles to get one whose text did not fade outdoors, only to find myself with a Kindle that did not fade, but with a light-colored text. Because of this, and much to my disappointment, I found myself recently picking up my Kindle 1 to finish reading a book when I just couldn't stand one more page of faint text. Since the primary reason to own a Kindle is to read upon it, this seems like a pretty big issue and one that I hope can be resolved. Thanks, Cindy Brooks. Well, as it turns out, there's a happy ending to Cindy's, the one thing that disappoints Cindy about the Kindle, or did, as she relayed in this email when we were talking back and forth by email about whether I was going to send my Kindle 2 in for a replacement.
Wow, Len, I almost hate to tell you this, but my replacement Kindle arrived today, and it is a marked improvement. I would even say a dramatic improvement. Something interesting I noticed, though, I don't know if this is relevant or not. On the older, fainter Kindle, the background had an almost greenish-brown undertone. The new one is more of a blue undertone, as is my Kindle One. I don't know if the replacement I received was a new or reconditioned one, as it arrived in a different box, not the fancy Kindle box or the tear strip in the black egg crate compartment for the device. All I can say is it is in perfect condition and the text is dark and crisp. I am a happy customer and I appreciate the inspiration I got from your podcast to try for a better reading experience. Time for the great grandfather's clock, tolling the hour at 7. So I heard from another listener, Lou Hood, who was so happy with Andrus's suggestion in the last podcast to try getting a Kindle 2 replacement that her email began, "Excuse me, Darlene, while I send Len an email hug." And then below there's a wonderful little icon of a smiling face and two hands outstretched wearing white gloves. So Lou, I want to thank you for my first ever email hug. Which I reported to Darlene, and you'll be glad to know that we are still married. Lou wrote, "After yesterday's Kindle Chronicles episode, I finally decided to call Amazon about the dark screen on my K2. One question was, had I seen any other K2s? I said I didn't know anyone that had any Kindles, only followed information on podcasts and the Amazon forum, and a lot of the early shipped ones received lots of complaints. I had hoped for a software update, but since the DX had a better screen, was giving up on an update and requesting a replacement. Then I dropped the bomb and told him about your Kindles as a comparison to screen reading ability. Conversation changed to ordering me a Kindle. 5! Estimated delivery date is not until July 8th, so it will be a while. Now it's your turn to call and complain about yours." I haven't heard yet if Lou's replacement Kindle arrived and if it's an improvement in screen contrast and readability. I certainly hope it is. And Lou, I hope you'll let me know if it turns out that the replacement solved the problem. Mike Malloy emailed from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. "Len, heard your recent podcast. Did you exchange your Kindle too? And if so, was it an improvement? Mine was one of the first batch. Is it worth the trouble?" I replied to Mike that I had requested a replacement, which, as I said earlier, was no better than my Kindle 2, but a marked improvement over my wife's, which we returned. So it may well be worth Mike's effort to see if Kindle can send a replacement to him worth keeping. Returning now to the topic of the Kindle's overall readability, and Kes, I promise I did not plant these to defend my side of the discussion that we had. But this comes from Peggy Polo. I think it's P-O-E-L-L-O-T. "Just a comment on my reading experiences. I have been reading along on my K1 and really liking it. A couple of weeks ago, a coworker of mine was reading Loving Frank by Nancy Horan. I expressed interest in it, and she offered to lend it to me when she was finished. Well, she finished it, and now I'm about halfway through it. The story is interesting, but I am annoyed with the physical book. The font is too small, and I can't, of course, change it. It's more difficult to hold while reading, but that's only part of it. I can't really put my finger on it, but the more I read on the Kindle, the more I don't want to read a paper book. I can't wait to finish it so I can return to reading on my Kindle. Still, I am hard-pressed to explain why. I have other unread books waiting on my shelves, but I keep buying books on my Kindle. I am interested in hearing others explain the Kindle reading phenomenon, since I can't seem to do it. Thanks a lot for the Kindle Chronicles. Please keep podcasting." Now, I did get a copy of Remembering Denny, the book that Kes recommended at a lovely independent bookstore, Capitol Hill Books, or Capitol Books, in downtown Denver. And I'm about halfway through, and I will say that I have been surprised at how The Strength of the Story by Calvin Trillin has just sort of captured me, and how pleasant it's been to sit in a comfortable chair by the windows of the living room at night reading this book and feeling the pages and all the usual things. But I have noticed the times when there was a word that Trillin used in an unusual way, and I thought, I really don't want to get up, cross the room, and go pull out one of my big dictionaries. It seems really odd that I can't just move the cursor up and get a quick definition of that word.
But I've also enjoyed doing the highlighting. I am someone who does deface books, and I love running a blue pen over a passage. So I'm going to hold off till I finish the whole book to really see if I still believe that I prefer reading a Kindle to a book. But I will admit to this point that I'm surprised at how pleasurable this particular book is, reading it, and no matter what the medium. Continuing, this is a comment from Rob Rutkowski. Hi, Len. Right now we have three Kindles, two K1s, and my new DX. I wanted to write you to let you know that I have had some success in using the Adesso CyberPad, that's A-D-E-S-S-O, CyberPad with the Kindle DX. The CyberPad captures everything you write on a pad of paper and lets you upload it to a computer. It outputs into various formats, including PDFs. Although I did have to recompile the PDFs I made with a full version of Adobe Acrobat to get them to work on the DX. Still, until the DX comes with a pen like you've discussed, the CyberPad is a bridge technology that works today. That's very interesting. I'm planning on doing a blog post on this for credit unions at some point, but I wanted to drop you a note and tell you about it first. Another awesome piece of software I've been using lately is Calibre, which lets me turn PDFs into a book format that the Kindle can read aloud to me. By printing them first to PDFs, I can turn Microsoft Word docs into books that the Kindle can read aloud too. That's going to be very useful. So that's what I'm doing with my DX. As fun as the K1 has been, the DX is an order of magnitude more useful. I'm using my DX at work every day. Regards, Rob. And he is a partner at Credit Union Department of Weltman, Weinberg, and Reis, R-E-I-S, in Brooklyn Heights, Ohio. It also says he's co-host and producer of Current Issues in Credit Union's podcast at www.ciicu.com. Al McDermott writes, I would really like to see a variable timeout to put the Kindle to sleep. My Palm has it. Why not my Kindle? 10 minutes is an awkward timeout for me as I read during commercials when watching TV, and it is always asleep when I come back to the book. And I really see no reason for that. Now I suggest an owner-selectable timeout, say 10, 30, 120, or 600 minutes. Why does it go to sleep at all if it uses no more power asleep or awake? Respectfully, Alan McDermott. And finally, I noticed a post about this podcast, The Kindle Chronicles, in French on a blog at ebookgbc.wordpress.com. And in the comments I left, I included an invitation for the blogger to call my comment line at 206-666-2713 because my French is passable and I thought it would be fun to hear some French on the show. Then Gilles Brunet obliged with the following comment in which he thanks me for my work on the podcast and adds that he's disappointed the Kindle is not available for purchase in Quebec. I believe he says he's purchased a Sony Reader, which he enjoys in part because of the backlight that enables him to read at night. And he also talks about his own blog for French speakers, which covers ebooks in general. If you know some French and you want to try understanding what Gilles has to say, here is his comment.
Bonjour, Len. C'est Gilles Brunet à Montréal. Alors, comme tu m'as demandé, je te laisse un message en français. Je suis à Montréal et j'écoute ton podcast à chaque semaine. Je trouve ça excellent. Merci énormément pour le travail que tu fais. J'ai malheureusement pas la possibilité d'avoir un Kindle au Canada parce qu'il n'est pas encore en vente, mais j'espère que ça s'en vient parce qu'on est plusieurs, je pense, à espérer avoir un Kindle le plus rapidement possible. En attendant, moi, ce que j'ai fait, je me suis acheté un Sony Reader et je suis assez satisfait. Je l'ai depuis 2-3 semaines et je suis vraiment satisfait. J'ai acheté le Sony 600 qui a un écran tactile et qui a des batteries. Un flashlight là tout le tour de l'écran avec des petites des lumières LED pour nous permettre de lire le soir au lit sans déranger notre conjoint. J'ai décidé aussi de partir un blog en français ici pour les gens de Montréal et les gens du Québec qui reprend en grande partie l'information que tu nous as mis sur ton propre blog. Et j'essaie de faire le pont entre les gens d'ici qui ne parlent pas nécessairement anglais et toute l'information qui est disponible aussi bien pour le Kindle, pour le modèle français, le Cybook Gen 3 ou bien les différents Kindle. Donc, allez jeter un coup d'œil à mon blog. Je vois que tu as déjà laissé un message. Le blog est disponible à l'adresse suivante, ebookgcb.wordpress.com. Alors, peut-être tu peux mettre l'adresse dans ton blog, j'apprécierais. Et ben, ça va peut-être rendre service aux francophones qui ont besoin de trouver de l'information sur la littérature en français ou encore sur le monde des e-books en général. Alors, un gros merci pour le travail, Len, et bravo encore une fois. Bye.
Merci, Gilles. That was great fun to hear your comment. I actually had one other audio comment in a language other than English from Esmeralda de Trafford in Australia. I'm going to hold that one over till next week. So if you are a Spanish speaker, you'll have something to look forward to in the comments next Friday. If you'd like to leave a comment in English or whatever, please call my comment line at 206-666-2713. You can leave a message there. You can re-record it and get it the way you like it, and then I'll be happy to put it on the show. Best to shoot for, you know, something fairly short, 30 seconds or under a minute, and just whatever's on your mind. It's great to hear from listeners. You can also email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you'd like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. I send people on that list a message or an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, and then sometimes if there's breaking news, I'll send out alerts to the people on that list and then also ask for help when I've got a big interview coming up and I could use some ideas for questions. My guest next week will be Tom, I'm not sure if it's Weber or Weber, it's W-E-B-E-R, of Smart Money, and he's the one that wrote the piece that Kes Woodward mentioned in our interview and that I blogged about at lenedgerly.com. The title of Tom's article was The Real Genius of the Kindle, The Return of Unitasking. So he weighed in on this whole issue of, is there really a difference in how we read on a Kindle versus other platforms, and I'm looking forward to talk to him to tease out some more ideas that were in his very well-written article. I'm happily amazed to realize that the one-year anniversary of this podcast is coming up. The actual date of my first show, which had an interview with the comedian and Onion digital wizard Baratunde Thurston, was on July 26th of 2008. So I'm going to celebrate the one-year anniversary on Friday, July 24th. That'll be episode 53 of the show, 3 weeks from today. And if I've heard another podcaster, I can't remember who, invited listeners to send in very brief messages that they put together in sort of a collage of voices. So I'd like to invite you to try that if you'd be willing to weigh in with a little audio comment about your experience of the Kindle or the show or maybe suggestions on the second year, things you'd like to see more of, less of. You know, give me a little feedback and encouragement. That would be terrific and much appreciated. The simplest way to do it would be to just call that audio comments line, 206-666-2713, and record a message there for me. If you know your way around a microphone and are able to leave a little higher quality MP3 file, you could email that to me as an attachment at podchronicles@gmail.com. It wouldn't hurt to, if you're moved to try this, to do it soon so that I get a feel for what might be coming in and sort of my idea to give me some ideas to shape the show. And it'll be fun to maybe put something together and have a little party on air for the one-year anniversary show. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about the Kindle. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.